Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Scarycast. This is Dr. John. We are so glad to have everybody on here tonight. We really have got a great guest tonight. His name is Marshall. He is an expert on Planet X, Nibiru, or however you would like to pronounce it. And we're so glad to have him, Marshall Masters. He is from the West Coast. He's got several books out. He's an expert on telecommunications, and we're just really glad to have him here. So he will be right here with us, and we've got a lot of great things happening here at Scarycast. We've got, of course, this coming Saturday night, we've got Battleground Championship Wrestling, where Scarycast and Dr. John will be, and with Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, we'll be there. And then, of course, we've got coming up the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And the Georgia Bigfoot Conference is going to be one heck of a great event. So we're looking forward to that. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I am now pleased to present the one and only, one of the great experts. And I know we sometimes say expert loosely, but I don't mean it here. Here is Marshall Masters. Marshall, good evening. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening, John. Oh, I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm doing well here on this cold Friday night in Myrtle Beach. You know, we're down here in the tropics, but it's cold tonight. And so that's okay. You're over there on the West Coast, and how is it there? Is it warm, intermediate, or freezing?
Cold and wet.
Cold and wet. Well, that's okay. We'll forget it, and we'll have a great time tonight on Scarycast. First of all, I wanted to
I'm actually in Grass Valley area. Go ahead.
I want to thank you for being here. I really do. I met you quite vicariously through a podcast or an interview, actually, with George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM. They sent out a Christmas present, which was, this is an archived interview with Marshall Masters about Planet X. I listened to it. I was enthralled. I contacted you, and now here we are. So, again, thank you so much for being with us. We're glad to have you here on Scarycast.
It's a pleasure to be here, and getting
the word out,
helping people with this is my job.
Well, that's wonderful. So I tell you what, I want to kick in question. We've all heard about Planet X. Planet X got a lot of publicity during the 2012 era when we were all looking for Armageddon or looking for something that didn't happen. We're all still here. So what I'd like to ask you to do is give us a Planet X for Dummies. Tell us about Planet X, Nibiru. Tell us about Nemesis. Tell us about the whole star system. Fill us in so that we're all on a good ground so that we can continue on and learn more from the guy himself, Marshall Masters.
Be happy to. Now, first thing I want to tell your listeners is I have a video up on my website, YOWUSA.com, and it's called Planet X 101, Who, What, Why, Where, When, and How. And this is a very detailed explanation. It's a lengthy video, and it's going to take you through all the details. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the 25-cent tour.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
My pleasure. And so let's just talk about it. First off, what are the kinds of things that you hear? There's a tremendous amount of disinformation about this. Now, keep in mind, my first article on Planet X was January of 2002. I've been at it since then. And I've seen everybody come and go, and I've seen a lot of noise and a lot of profit takers and fear porn mongers and whatnot. There's also a tremendous amount of disinformation people need to understand. Most of the disinformation is actually organized out of the Crown, which is a city state that's run and owned by the elites and in London, kind of like the Vatican City in Rome. So that is Disinformation Central on Planet X is the crown. And this is something that you're going to hear, well, it's all of a big hoax that started in 1995 with a gal by the name of Nancy Leader. Well, it didn't start with Nancy. She was a Johnny-come-lately, and so am I for that matter. Because if you watch my video, Planet X, Who, What, Where, When, Why, and How, that is going to show you that this actually goes back a long, long way. It started actually with the discovery of the planet Uranus. Now, Uranus was the very first planet humanity discovered using newly invented telescopes. And they used those telescopes to make very precise observations. And what they found was what we call, what astronomers call perturbation in the orbit, a little zag, you know, just coming around and kind of goes out a little bit and comes back in and then continues back on its orbital path. And when you see those little perturbations, those zigzags, that's caused by a large object that is in the vicinity of what you're observing that has a gravitational force on it. And gravitational force is something that's really, really powerful. People don't realize that if the moon were to disappear tomorrow, what would happen to the Earth? We'd all die because the moon exerts so much tidal gravitational force upon the surface of the planet that if it suddenly disappeared, the entire surface of Earth would collapse approximately 18 inches. Which means arrivederci, we all go. It's a global extinction. So gravity and these tidal forces are very, very powerful. Now, they were observing Uranus, observing the perturbations, and what happened was interesting. Next step was the astronomers were giving the observations to mathematicians. The mathematicians were able to work out the coordinates for the perturber of Uranus, which turned out to be Neptune. And this was something, it was an amazing thing, because when they finally did the calculations and sent them to Galt in the Berlin Observatory, he just pulled his telescope right around, boom, found Neptune just as quick as you please. It was amazing, a planet discovered with mathematics. But then they're observing Neptune, and what happens? Neptune had perturbations as well. So the astronomers in Europe began calling it Neptune's Perturber. That was the very first name given to what today we call Planet X, Nibiru, Destroyer, Hercules, the Red Giant, the Red Dragon. There's all kinds of names because it comes from a lot of history and a lot of folklore. But the first name was Neptune's Perturber. Well, that sat in Europe for a while and kind of languished until there was a wealthy Bostonian who he didn't have to go get funding from anybody. And he went off, Percival Lowell, and started the observatory, the Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff. And he did it so that he could find Neptune's Perturber. And that eventually led to the discovery of Pluto by Clyde Tombaugh of the same observatory. And this was very powerful stuff because And one of the things that happened, you'll see disinformation attacks. The Washington Post does it. They called Tombaugh, you know, like a stupid farm boy, and they ridiculed Powell. These are men of science that have really walked tall. And they had some idiot little girl who I call her Bagel Babe because that's all she did. She wrote food columns or something. Never knew science. But she was working with Caltech and astronomers there, and the whole point of it was astronomers in South America actually spotted what they believed to be a large, old brown dwarf star and a massive planet. And they put out the white papers with their observations and findings, and they were crushed financially. They were crushed. Their careers were on the line, and so they had to withdraw their papers at the speed of politics. Now, is that the first time astronomers spotted something, this dynamic duo, if you will? No. The first one to really, first astronomer to talk about it was a fellow by the name of Carlos Muñoz Ferrada. And in 1940, he said there is a black star with a large planet in orbit around it that he called Hercobolus. Now, Hercobolus actually was what the Atlanteans called Planet X or Nibiru. And the black star is what astronomers call Nemesis, which is a brown dwarf. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, I want to stop you real quickly and ask you a question. How big,
sure,
do you have any stats or any estimate of how big is this planet?
Well, what we have is a mini constellation. And that's when we're talking about Planet X, you need to think in terms of system, not one object.
Okay.
That's where people get all confused. They're trying, where's that one thing? Where's that one thing? Because if you can find the one thing, it's simple. Okay, done that, you know, got it nailed, all that. Now all of a sudden it's complicated because you got a brown dwarf star about twice the size of Jupiter with three planets that are all larger than Earth in orbit around it with moons that are in orbit around them. And there's even minor planets in this mini constellation, a small system inside our system. And it is a captive. It is in it's in an orbit, goes around our sun from north to south every 3,600 years and around every 360 days. It moves on two axes. And so this system is in a parallel but opposite orbit to us. And that's the reason why we just keep seeing it behind the sun. But eventually, we're going to merge with it. It will cross over on top of us. And when it goes over our orbit, that's when it gets really bad. Nibiru is calculated to be, and it's the outermost planet, about 4 to 7 times the size of Earth. And what the big concern is when this system comes through and it arcs going south, and it spends most all of its 3,600 years in the southern skies. It's only when it's in the northern skies that it creates grief for us, and that's exactly where it is right now. But you've heard, like, for example, in the Bible, the 3 days of darkness. Well, there's a good explanation for that. You ever heard of Ed Dames? The fellow does remote viewing. And
yeah.
Ed Dames is talking about, Ed Dames talks about something called the kill shot. And, you know, I had a chance to meet Ed, and I have to be honest. He had a video he put out, I think it was 2004, 2005, his first kill shot video. And I looked at it years later and realized he'd been, at that point in time, he was a light year ahead of me. He really had it. Now, what he's talking about, the kill shot, is he's saying there's going to be what's called a solar sprite or cosmic lightning, if you will, that comes from the sun and slams into the Earth with catastrophic consequences. Now, is it possible that there's a solar sprite? Well, yeah, they tell us that the Grand Canyon was created by water erosion. Well, I've been in the Grand Canyon. I've flown through it. And, you know, that one just never grabbed me as a really good descriptive explanation. But if we look at Val Marineris on Mars, which is actually the largest canyon in the solar system, much bigger than the Grand Canyon, That is a perfect example of what Ed Dames is talking about, a solar sprite. It got slammed by cosmic lightning. And that is something that you want to keep in mind, because what he's saying is it's going to hit us. Now, how does it hit us? So remember, Nemesis is a brown dwarf star. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later on, because it's important to understand some things about a brown dwarf. And it's coming through the system, arcing over our heads. So when you hear them on the news and they say, don't worry, it's not going to hit us, that'll be the truth. The lie will be, go forth, consume, eat and be merry, it's not going to hurt us. When you hear that dismissive nonsense from our fake media garbage idiots, talking heads, that's when you know we're in deep kimchi. The pain's coming. Because the next time they say...
Tell us what's going to happen.
Well, what's going to happen is an intensification of what is already happening. John, everybody always says, what's going to happen when he gets here? What's going to happen? When it's going to get here? When it's going to get here? When, what? And I keep trying to tell them the same thing. It's here. And we're already being perturbed, for God's sakes. But people don't want to see that. They don't want to see that it's actually happening in front of their eyes. They want it to be way out in the future, as in, it's not going to happen on my watch. My kids will have to deal with it. That's what people really want. But the fact is, it's here. How do we know? Now, you go to my website, YOWUSA.com, and you read my signs articles. We're on article number 30. I'm getting ready to do number 31. And I would have it up already, but after I posted an observation video that came out of Russia, it was a little too close to the bone for the elites, and they had YouTube demonetize my channel, even though I had no complaints and no strikes. So they're sending a message, don't do it. And not only did they do that, then when I published an article about it, they attacked my website, and we're having to clean up the mess. What we're going to start seeing in the coming years, what I call at-altitude observations. These are people in airplanes that are looking out the window, and they're seeing two suns in the sky. You go to my website, and you're going to see it says the best Nibiru observation video 2018. Watch that. I paid for that in treasure, folks. Okay? So please, go watch it. Now, you're going to see that kind of stuff, and we're going to see a lot more of it. I'm already starting to see a trickle come in, but I'm figuring probably by the middle of this year, we're going to have a whole lot of these at altitude things coming up, and it's going to push the conversation in a new direction. So all this suppression on me right now is going to be temporary, because at a certain point, the dam's going to come wide open. For those of you listening, you're probably 6 months from now, if you've been saying, well, I'm not going to do anything to prepare because I want to wait and see. You may think it's clever, but by the time you get off your backside and do something about it, you're going to have to get into some pretty long lines. We're talking about survival and preparedness gear. It's going to be, you know, crowds of people like Black Saturday, but everyone's paying full pop or two or three times, or the shelves are bare. Right now, if you're thinking about preparedness, this is when you're going to get the deals. This is when you're going to get the bargains. This is when you have to say, okay, I believe my lion eyes. I trust my own gut instinct. I'm going to do it. And if not, what everything I'm telling you right now, it's pointless. Go play your Nintendo. I'm serious. Just eat, drink, and be merry and go play your Nintendo. Because I'm talking about life and death. It's coming. I've seen this thing with my own eyes. That, as a researcher, that totally devastated my world. That I saw it with my own eyes, unaided, with another observer. We saw exactly the same thing. We cross-checked each other. And that changes your whole life. So I appreciate the fact that when people hear about this, it's, oh, yeah, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. And I don't know. And this guy can't see it. And I get the idiots and say, well, I'm standing out in the middle of my backyard and it's 12 o'clock in the afternoon and I can't see it. It's because if an object is behind the sun, the only time you can see it is very close to dusk or very close to dawn. Okay? You got to get that light.
That'll change
because, and we're seeing that with the at altitude observations because these are in the middle of the day. Okay? And that's the reason why I really like these at altitude observations, and I have documented them. And I can tell you, there are people that are financially incredibly successful in this topic. I'm not. Because I try and have, for me, the integrity of my work is what matters. So I don't want to go out and pump fear porn. So there's clickbait dragging you into my channel, and I'll get my AdSense revenue and this and that and all that stuff. And it's feed the beast nonsense of throwing stuff up that's utterly ridiculous. I just am not going to do that. I'm in it for the people. And that you just don't do that. Not in my attitude. I mean, there's others do, and they profit from it very well. But you're going to have to be discerning. I can tell you, I only publish maybe 2% of the observation reports I receive from people. Okay? I am that picky. So if you see it on my site, and you're likely going to see if it's on my site, I'm going to give you an analysis that breaks it down. I'm going to say, here's what we got. And I have various different ways of testing the images. So we're going to see all of this a lot more coming on. And if you're saying, well, we'll wait and see, and you're going to think about it later, I only have one piece of advice. For God's sakes, when everything goes sideways and people are in a panic, keep shut. Keep your mouth shut. If you go and tell everybody, well, I've known about this for a year, you're going to be surrounded by hysterical, crazy people. You could have someone, little old lady with a PhD, steps out from the crowd and says, you manifested this. It's happening because you willed it. If we eliminate you, we eliminate what you've manifested. And then someone else in the crowd is going to go, get a rope, and you're going to swing off a tree. So for God's sakes, if you don't do anything preparedness, you're not being active about it, when things do go sideways, keep your mouth shut, period, because that's going to keep you alive. Now,
I got to ask you a question. Pardon? You talk about when things go sideways, what types of things might we expect?
I am going to be publishing an article that says 2018 was the worst ever year in recorded history for fireball observations and earthquakes of all magnitudes.
Okay.
The fireballs, that is rocks this system is throwing at us. And the earthquakes is the result of the perturbation of our sun by its approaching twin, Nemesis, which has increased the luminosity of the sun. It's getting brighter, which means more radiation. So we already have everything. Look at all the volcanoes. When I first started doing this stuff, John, there would be about 35 to 40 volcanic active volcanoes in a course of a year, 12 months.
Okay.
That wasn't including erupting volcanoes, which there'd be one or two. So you have active volcanoes. They're rumbling and they're smoking and whatnot. Well, right now I think we got 22 of them that are erupting. Etna is getting scary. Okay, Krakatoa is getting scary. And I will tell you that all of the psychics I've worked with over the years have always been, it's been a constant drumbeat. They always go, when Vesuvius goes, we're in deep kimchi. You either get ready or you get dead. And that's what the psychics all say. So Vesuvius is what they're looking for. We have all this volcanism. We have all this earthquake activity. We have land tears. We have sinkholes. Now we have a new trend. Transformers are blowing up all over the doggone place. We had Jenner, Louisiana. They had transformers blowing all over town, arcing. Well, here in California, I'm in the Grass Valley area right now with friends. Right down the road from me is a huge car park where there's a gazillion PG&E trucks. They're out here replacing the transformers. All of a sudden, everybody's got to replace transformers. Isn't that a little odd? Why?
Yep.
Okay. Because what's happening is with this increased solar brightness, more radiation is striking the Earth. And this is creating a whole series of things. What we have right now is what I call crustal undulation. And crustal undulation is a very simple explanation of what Edgar Cayce told us would be the causality for a pole shift, that being the core of the planet. Well, the radiation is coming in. It's causing uneven heating and cooling in the core of the planet. The undulation is a result of that uneven heating as a result of this increased luminance. And so this is what is causing all of these bizarre things to happen in places where they never happened before. All right. So, John, it's in your face. The question is it happening to you? And this is a really important question. You know, for example, the Camp Fire came within 40 miles of my current location. That's a two-day march for a fire. Okay, we
wow.
were on red flag alert. They were telling us, you better be ready to scoot with 4 hours notice. Throw what you can in the car and get the heck out of Dodge. All right. And there were people here that knew folks in Paradise and that had burned to death in their cars. And it was a real upsetting thing for the people here. But for everybody else in the country, it was just a blip. Everyone else is watching these little ditzy idiots run into the, you know, to the Senate building and, you know, waylaying people in the elevators and all kinds of this hysterical political distraction. All right, that's what we're seeing. They're really not reporting what's really happening. The media does not, you know, it has to have a lot of dead people before they're going to do something serious about it. There's got to be something that really jumps up. And they're more hardened on that than ever before. Our fourth estate is essentially dead. And I'm saying this is a former CNN science feature producer. Our fourth estate, as far as the media is concerned, it's dead. What's left is a bunch of propaganda mills. And it's, you know, I can't even, I go to turn on CNN, I get sick to my stomach because it's like watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Because when I was involved, by God, it was a lean, mean news machine and there were professional ethics, as in you had to have two real sources on a story. Who'd have thunk it? Today, you don't need a real source. All you need is someone to invent an anonymous source, and then they say they believe their invented anonymous source, and that's all we have. That is what the fourth estate's been eliminated, has been reduced to. So if you're sitting there going, well, I'm not going to believe it until I see it on CNN, I'm sorry, friend, but you're as dumb as a sack of hammers. I'm going to be just straight out with you. You're going to wait to see this on CNN. You are as dumb as a sack of hammers, and you're going to be just as dead. You got to start thinking for yourself.
Jim Acosta or whatever. So, yeah, that's a shame. But so anyway, you're describing what we're seeing now. What type of destruction will we see as this system gets closer to the Earth?
Oh, that's pretty easy. Okay. Tell me, do you know what the three rules of prime real estate are, John?
Location, location, and location.
Amen, brother. Same thing here. Location, location, location. It's going to depend. Now, you got to remember, this thing is coming up from below, arcing up around the sun, and it's going to then head south. It's going to pass between Mars and Jupiter, the orbits of Mars and Jupiter, as it goes south. Well, and when it crosses the ecliptic, the plane of our system, oh, that's when Ed Dames, that's what he's talking about. That's when his cosmic sprite, or the kill shot as he calls it, that's when that's going to happen, because that's when the electrical interaction between Nemesis and the sun is going to be most powerful. Now, remember, Nemesis, this dark star, has its own planets and moons, and its most outermost is Nibiru. It's big, between 4 to 7 times the size of Earth. It's a rocky planet. Well, what is going to happen is that while Nemesis is passing between Mars and Jupiter, Nibiru will be passing between Venus and Earth, hence the 3 days of darkness. You got that?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Because it will get in front of the sun, and we'll have an eclipse, correct?
No, it's just going to go dark. It's not even an eclipse. I mean, today we think about an eclipse, and you have that nice umbral pattern around it, you know? And then everybody, ooh,
yeah.
Oh, you know, it looks good. No. This is going to be black like you've never seen black in the sky. It's going to terrify the hell out of people, because you're going to have something that's several times the size of the Earth passing between us and Venus. All right. And this is the worst case scenario. Basically, you have two extremes. You have Exodus, which is the best case scenario, and the worst case scenario is Noah's flood. Now, Noah's flood was a pole shift event, period. That's what did it, all right? And I publish a book called The Colburn Bible. This is an ancient wisdom text. The first part of it was written at the same time as the five books of Moses by the Egyptians. And when they wrote it, it was originally basically their 9/11 report. They're trying to figure out, how did this scrappy little Hebrew god kick the heck out of their pantheon of almighty Egyptian gods? And they never could get the, you know, they figured it was a subordinate god, and they didn't understand. It was God, not some statue. And so they never picked up on that. But we have all the information from the ancient Egyptians. They describe what happens. And I mean, it is as clear as man on the street interviews. It's very, very, very powerful. And, you know, the Colburn's a big book. Take a long time. We have a little book called Planet X Connection, Colburn Bible and Planet X Connection. That's a one-day read, even less than that. I call it a cup of tea book. You finish reading that, you're going to know if this is your cup of tea or not, because it's going to sit there and line up what the Colburn says about the previous flybys with the Bible and other wisdom texts and holy texts. And so when you see the connections, what's really obvious to me, because I come at the Bible purely as a resource. I don't give it any more credit than that. I have an equal playing field on everything. But what I have learned is that the Bible really is a Planet X primer in many respects. Now, let's talk about Exodus, the 10 plagues of Exodus, because that's the best case scenario. What is the first thing that happens? What's the first plague? The water turns to blood. Well, how does that happen? Now, remember I told you we needed to talk a little more about Nemesis, the dark star, the sister sun, the small sister sun to our soul. It's about twice the size of Jupiter. And it has these planets, but we can't, it's very, very difficult to see because it's shrouded with this huge iron oxide dust field. And there's a lot of Schreibersite in there. And the Schreibersite is going to be raining down on the planet. That's the reason why we track fireballs. That's another one of the plagues. And the Schreibersite is going to cause algae blooms to go absolutely ape. The algae put microcystin, a very deadly toxin, into the water. It's deadly enough it can kill auxins as well as it can human beings, fish, and frogs. You know, so it makes sense. The frogs, their skin's burning off their bodies. They're going to get out of the water. The fish can't. They rot. They die. That attracts the bugs, the bees, whatever. The flies and the gnats and all of that. I mean, if you take the 10 plagues of Exodus out of allegorical order and you put them in a scientific order, snaps together like Legos. So if you're going, what's going to happen, Marshall? I'm telling you, go read your Bible. It tells you exactly what's going to happen. All right? Now, why is it we have a hard time seeing it? Well, remember I told you about Carlos Muñoz Ferrada. And in 1940, he said there was a black star and a large planet called Hercules. Well, he was really talking about what we talk about today as Nemesis and Nibiru. And that's what he was talking about. He gave an orbital path for it, described what would happen, and he was right on the money. Now, he wasn't the first astronomer to do this. There was an astronomer with the Naval Observatory in Washington. He did a brilliant paper on it, and many believe he was assassinated for his work on Planet X because he gave an interview to Zachariah Sitchin. And Zachariah Sitchin, who wrote The 12th Planet, really the guy that brought Nibiru to the table through the translations of the ancient Sumerian texts. And so there's a tremendous amount of history and a tremendous amount of research and professionals, astronomers, physicists, people who are with it. So when you hear all this la-di-da nonsense about, well, it's these idiots with tinfoil hats and all that, what you're listening to is the voice of people who want you to die. Okay? They want you to die. Get used to that. So, a brown dwarf is different from our sun, and interestingly enough, this is a new type of sun for science. It's been around. They've been around forever. So they're hard to find, hard to see. And so astronomers finally are working on this, and they realize there's actually more brown dwarfs out in our galaxy than there are suns of our own type. All right? There's a whole lot of brown dwarfs, and a brown dwarf is big enough to ignite, but it's not big enough like our sun to maintain what I call a nuclear furnace so that it stays bright in the sky. What happens is because it doesn't have enough mass to keep that nuclear furnace going, so to speak, it becomes like a charcoal briquette in the barbecue out in the backyard in the summers. And if you're good at barbecue, you know, you don't put the meat on until the coals are all white. You want them to bank off, all right? Well, that's the same thing with a brown dwarf. It's like coals that are just, you know, banking off in the barbecue. And you're not going to see that from the house. You're going to have to actually get out of the house, walk over to your barbecue, and look at it. And in most cases. So that's the reason why it's hard to see. And it is surrounded by all of this, when it first came to life, you know, suns, when they do that, they create a heck of a mess, all right? But out of that mess, what's called protoplanetary disk, the planets are forming. So that's how Earth came to be. And that's where the material to create Earth. So you have this Nemesis, which is a small sister sun to our sun. And it is in an orbit around our sun. It is in a captive orbit around the sun. And when it gets close enough, we'll see it with the naked eye. Now, when did our government see it for the first time? That was 1983 with IRAS. The infrared astronomy telescope. It was a sky survey that they did. And when NASA, and they did this in conjunction with Europe, ESA, they put it out there because the original pioneers that they sent out were actually sent out to determine if it was theoretically possible for Neptune's perturbator to be out there at the edge of our system. And so they were actually with the Pioneer 1, Pioneer 2, it was they were trying to find Neptune's perturbator. And they got a fairly good idea of where to look for it when IRAS went up in 1983. They found it. Now, this I have from military whistleblowers with high security levels. Both of them the same way. And they were both high-ranking sergeants. And these were the guys that were given the keys to the secrets vaults. And so as an officer, if you had a security clearance, you could go in there. And based on your clearance, the sergeant would give you whatever you're looking for. Otherwise, the sergeant, nobody bothered them. Well, these guys that were doing it, they had the keys to the kingdom. So they'd all go out, and what would they do? If there's nobody coming around to pester them for information, they'd open the cabinets and read it themselves. And that's when they were like, whoa, Nelly, is this news? So what happened with NASA and IRAS was once they spotted it in infrared, and it wasn't hard. Boy, it just, you may not see it in the visible light spectrum until it's close, but in infrared, stands out like a sore thumb. And so they spotted it. Well, what they did was they created a false flag crisis. They said that the cooling system for the camera on board the IRAS had failed. Even though it's out in the cold of space, in order for the infrared camera to work, it needed to be even colder. Well, that gave them a perfect pretext. They could say, we can't get any more information back from, you know, the camera's not going to operate, but we can still, you know, navigate this, the probe.
Now, Marshall,
the Italians figured out that was a lot.
You can't get any colder than absolute zero, 10.
Pardon?
You can't get any colder than absolute zero, which is what it is in space.
Well, they have to have a cooling system on board the spacecraft for the camera, and that's what they claim failed. All right, was the cooling system.
Well, I blow a little hole. I get some of that cold in there, but that's just me. That's just me and the Boy Scout and my Boy Scout mentality. But anyway, please go ahead, because I've truly enjoyed hearing your stories. They're great. Please continue. I just had to mention that. I couldn't stand it. Is that okay?
Oh no, that's fine. That's fine. And so the thing is that, and it was the Italian astronomers from ESA. They picked up on what was happening, and they were bloody ticked off, and the Dutch were as well. But what NASA did was once they spotted this thing, and they had their cover story, they didn't have to share any intelligence with anybody anymore, and they exhausted the remaining navigation fuel on board the spacecraft so that they could continuously keep it pointed at Nemesis. Why? Because they were developing what's called an ephemeris. And an ephemeris is what astronomers use to tell them where to look for a certain object at a certain time. You know, if you have like a telescope, you can go get these little charts and you can line up and it says, where are you at? I'm in the 30th, you know, I'm in 30 degrees north and it's this time of year, and it'll tell you, okay, this is what you can find in the sky. All right, that's what an ephemeris is. Or think of it like a train schedule. Now, it tells you the train is going to be at this station, at this station, at this station, at this station, at certain times, and it's there if the ephemeris is done right, and it arrives just like a, you know, Mussolini's fascist trains. They were always on time. Well, that's what they were trying to do, is figure out an ephemeris on this thing so they could determine a big question. When this thing arcs over our head, excuse me, and passes between Mars and Jupiter, where will we be? Going back to the three magic rules of premium real estate, location, 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 where will we be in relationship to it? Now, the reason why Exodus was the best case scenario was that this system crossed the plane of our system, all right? That, okay. Imagine the sun's equator, draw a line from that all the way to the 12 constellations of the zodiac, all right? That's called the ecliptic. Okay. And when this system crosses the ecliptic, that's when its interaction with the sun is going to be immensely intense. That's when the kill shot happens. Well, the reason why Exodus was a global problem. It just wasn't a hard-hearted pharaoh. That was a pretty easy explanation to get the allegory going through over the years and very necessary. But Earth was on the opposite side of the sun from Nemesis when it was going south and crossed the ecliptic. And that was the reason why Exodus was the best case. But Noah's flood was where we were on the same side of the sun as Nemesis when it was going south and crossed the ecliptic. Now, how do we know that Noah's flood was a pole shift event? All right.
That's a great question, Marshall. Please address that. That's one that I've been wondering about. So what do you think? Tell us.
Okay. Now, you know the story of Noah's flood. Where did Noah build his ark? Did he build it down? You know, if you're smart and you go to Wall Street Investor, you'd say if you're going to build an ark for a disaster, do it down in the harbor. So if you don't have your disaster, you convert it to a casino and hotel and we all get rich.
Yeah,
so Noah built it down in the harbor so he could get rich. Where did he build his ark?
He built it on a mountain.
Yeah. That doesn't make sense. No wonder people were walking up to him and his wife and going, sorry, buddy, but your elevator don't go all the way to the top. All right? Didn't make sense to him. But on the other hand, if you have a pole shift event, what happens is all the major bodies of water will slosh. Think of a milkmaid walking with a full bucket of milk, swinging it. And what's happened? The milk is sloshing back and forth, and some of it's coming out the edge of the pail, right? You got that
right.
Slosh. That's what Noah's flood was. It wasn't 40 days of rain. The 40 days of rain did happen. But that wasn't the disaster. The disaster was the slosh, because the system came through and it shifted our planet on its axis. Now, we are tilted relative to the ecliptic, 23.5 degrees.
Correct.
Isn't that a little odd? But that's exactly what happens if you have a major body passing through the system, exerting massive tidal gravitational forces, not only Nemesis, but all of its super planets as well, because they're all bigger than Earth and the major ones. And so that's a lot of tidal gravitational force. And boom. What happens is, and I agree with Ed Dames, I think we're about a 12 to 13, 14 degree polar shift. And that means when we're talking about, there's different kinds of shifts. You have a crustal shift, an axial shift, and a magnetic shift. An axial shift is right now we're 23.5 degrees inclined. That gives us these wonderful four seasons. Well, if this next flyby reduces that amount from 23.5 to something smaller, what's going to happen? Well, we're not going to have four seasons. We're basically going to have two seasons, and things are going to move more slowly. But on the other hand, if we tip the other way, say we go, you know, in the direction of, you know, adding more inclination, then we're going to have unbelievably hot summers and unbelievably cold winters. Could very well, either way, could be an extinction level event.
All right. Now, hold on, Marshall. I've got a question for you. Because I've done a little bit of research about the three pyramids in Giza. And one of them points to Polaris, which is our current North Star. Another one points to the previous North Star that was at the top of the rotational axis. The next one points to Vega, which is in, you know, in the constellation Lyra. Now, that is what Edgar Cayce says, and this is what, and by the way, you know, we're out of time in 10 minutes. I want to talk to you again very soon this week about some of my research about this type of topology and how it relates to the polar shifts and how it relates to Planet X. So let me ask you, I'm just going to go ahead and ask you right now. When we get done tonight, in a couple of days, can we have another discussion? And I'll get you my talking points before then. Would you do that with me, please?
Are you bringing the pizza and beer?
Yeah.
Good, you got me.
Okay, good. I'll make sure that they deliver the pizza to your address. But anyway, here's a question. They were talking about the fact that, or Edgar Cayce was, that Vega could be the next North Star. If that does, that puts us at a 56-degree tilt. Now, a 56-degree tilt is going to cause complete pandemonium. As I was looking at it, and I want to do a little bit more work on the model. But, I mean, we will have many parts of the Earth that are going to stay frozen, as you said, half the year, and then they're going to bake for half the year. And, of course, if that happens, we're going to lose a lot of population. And if we lose a lot
That's
of
right.
population, we're not the little population that's left is going to congregate where we have those temperate climates. And I'm going to put that together. I will send that map to you, and we will would that be okay? I'd love to discuss that with you.
Absolutely. You know, it's and you're right. If it went to that extent,
that's unbelievable.
But it's a lot. But you know, it's 56 degrees. What they're saying is basically the tilt will be twice of what it is now. We have a 23.5
right.
degree tilt, so it would go from 23.5. It just
more
double,
than double.
It would double.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, but the thing is, we don't know to say with any certainty what the extent of the pole shift is going to be and how it's going to play out. But what I can tell you is that even in a worst case scenario, humanity survived. Now, the thing is that it's all depending on location. And if we have a situation where it's, you know, we tilt another 12 degrees, well, that'll be hard enough as it is on us. There are other things. You have magnetic pole shift, which is already starting to happen. And that means the North Pole becomes the South Pole and vice versa. And then you have a crustal shift. So you could have an axial shift, but it's a minor axial shift. Or maybe the axis doesn't shift at all. And what we have is a crustal shift. And if we have a crustal shift, then it's the skin of the planet, so to speak, the lithosphere.
That's all over for us, Marshall. A crustal shift?
Huh?
That'd be crazy. That would be crazy.
Well, there are people that say we're going to flip head over heels. If that happens, we're back. Earth is back to single cell animals. That's it. It's game over.
Yeah.
But the thing here is that it's not about, we have the axis and then we have the crust. Now, if the crust shifts what you're talking about, but the axis of the planet stays relatively where it is, then what's going to happen, John, is it's going to change the weather, but we're not going to have a change in the seasons. So if you're in an area where, let's say, for example, there, you know, you're in South Carolina, all right?
Yep.
Well, yep. After a crustal pole shift, you could be much closer to the equator, more like the Bahamas, which means your weather would then become more like the Bahamas. You see what I'm saying? So
sure.
If it's a crustal shift, it's going to affect different regions, but it's not going to affect the seasons. What will only thing that will affect the seasons is an axial shift. So don't be afraid of 56 degrees if it's a crustal shift. That just means you're going to either be hotter or colder, one way or the other.
Well, here's what we'll do, Mark. Well, because we're about out of time for the night, and I really appreciate you being with us. I'm going to put all this documentation together. I'm going to pass it by you. We'll talk about it. And then when we get together in a couple of days, and I will certainly announce that Garrettcast, and hopefully you'll be able to announce that on your site, we'll get together and we'll talk about these potential problems that we can have. And so, Marshall, I wanted to say, first of all, thank you. Meeting you has been truly a wonderful experience. You're a wealth of knowledge. You really know. You've got a great idea of what's going on with the Planet X world. And that's something that I want Scarycast to really stay on top of, because this absolutely will affect us. Also, next time, not only talking about pole shifts, crustal shifts, and potential problems, would you talk a little bit with us next time about communication, radio communication? That's something that you and I both love and both believe in.
Absolutely. I just brought out a book, Radio Free Earth. You can learn about it at radiofreeearth.org. I've got an hour and 40 minutes of free instruction there to help you get started. It's going to tell you what's how this is going to be important to you, how you're going to organize with others, and where to begin. I'm giving you all that information. You want to go further than that, then buy the book. That book is going to help you use any kind of consumer or amateur radio. And just remember, you may not think it's important to have two-way radios, but the people who want to steal what you have and kill you and rape your women, they're going to have two-way radios.
That's right. So we're going to cut it off there. I'll let everybody know that I have my copy safely here in Myrtle Beach that I'm going to be. And Marshall, you and I will talk about that over the next several days as we get ready for part two of Marshall Masters and Planet X. So I want to thank you very much, really from the bottom of my heart, to have such a wonderful, well-educated, smart, and experienced guest on Scarycast. And we'll see you back in a couple of days. We'll announce it for everybody. And I want to say thanks a lot for listening to the one and only Scarycast. There's nothing else like it, and we'll see you in a couple of days. Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll, and cheers. Cheers, Marshall.
Cheers.
Oh.